It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder.
Believe in ghosts?
First simply disappears, the other two died.
Pretties. It's your host, Ashley Lana, your certified nightmare prescriber, welcoming you back to another episode. How is everyone doing? As always, I truly hope that you are manifesting positivity, and as cheesy as that sounds, I mean it. Because it's true, you are what you surround yourself with, and if you're around negativity and manipulation, then you will radiate that energy into your life. It might go unnoticed by you, but others will notice. So manifest positivity. Laws of attraction, yes. Here in the Fear Cult, we discuss horrific crimes. However, I hope to bring you a safe environment to discuss and understand the concepts of true crime. And although some stories are sad, I want you to feel enlightened on what can be learned from the situations. And I'm a happy person, so I hope to manifest my positive energy into your ears, even after together we have discussed true crime. So with that being said, welcome to Lullaby. The previous episode, we discussed the murder of Junko Furuta, and that episode was a tough case. It was another wow episode, which is worst of the worst, and that beautiful girl got tortured for 44 days, and she was such a strong young woman, and I bless her even in death. May she rest in peace. This week is taking a turn for the twisted and bizarre. We're gonna go into the macabre. The first time we will be delving into the mind of a necrophile, a person who is sexually attracted to a corpse. So get comfortable, because sweet dreams are made of these. The following story contains subject matter involving graphic descriptions of mental health and necrophilia. Please take into consideration that some topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. As he watched her sleep peacefully on their luxurious bed, he wondered to himself, "How did I ever get so lucky?" His bride's hair lay flat behind her head, and her lips glistened in the candlelit room. The man applied a lotion to his hands and began slowly massaging it into her skin. He heard her moan with pleasure, and he smiled to himself. "Everything I do is for you, my love. No one can take you away from me." The man reached out and slowly caressed her face. He had been searching for the woman who appeared in his dream since his childhood, and after traveling the entire world, he found her. And now he got to spend every waking moment of his life beside her. The two stayed up all night enjoying each other's company, and together they laughed and reminisced about when she was sick and how he saved her. The man tucked in his beautiful wife and blew out the candles. He curled up next to her and noticed that her waxy skin was colder than usual. He began curling up closer to her. "I'll keep you warm." As the old man drifted into slumber, his wife remained on her back, staring up at the ceiling. She never had to worry about falling asleep, because she had been asleep for 7 years, the eternal sleep of death. This is the true story of Carl Tanzler and his corpse bride. George Carl Tanzler, more commonly known as Carl, was born in Dresden, Germany on February 8, 1877. He lived a quiet, uneventful life with his parents and his sister. Carl spent his adolescence reading, writing, and studying how the world worked. He possessed the ability to impress others with his intelligence very early on. He developed strange quirks as a child. When Carl was only 10 years old, his family traveled to Italy, and during this stay, Carl claimed that his dead ancestor visited him in a vision, Countess Anna Constantia von Brockdorf, the Countess of Kossel, a German noblewoman and a lady-in-waiting who was also the mistress of Augustus the Strong, the King of Poland. This, of course, was a lie. Carl made many claims in his biography about his life, which many could never be proven. Carl explained that he had a vision, and this woman came to him, and saying that a woman with beautiful dark hair and tan skin would be the one true love, the one he could never let go of. As Carl grew into adulthood, his confidence granted him many opportunities that most could not achieve. He claims that he graduated from the University of Leipzig with a total of 9 degrees, being an expert in multiple topics of science. These claims seem to be false. He traveled quite exclusively to places such as India, Italy, and the South Seas, and eventually found himself in Australia. His aspirations were to collect equipment to study sea conditions. He even started building a secret sailboat. Carl became very interested in engineering and electrical work, and while in Australia, he even mastered the English language. Over the course of 10 years, Carl's continued working and he was happy with his busy life. When World War I began, the world lived in fear. In Australia, due to Carl being a German citizen, he was forced into a concentration camp. At this time, international law forbade prisoners from returning home to their native country for their own protection. Carl, along with other prisoners, were transferred to Trial Bay in New South Wales, Australia. He was kept in a large castle-esque prison that overlooked the ocean. Carl spent years working in the fort for a living, and once the war ended in November of 1918, Carl was still not permitted to return to his residence in Australia. Carl then got transferred to Holland, where he was part of a prisoner exchange. He was then released and went to live with his mother back in Germany. In 1920, 43-year-old Carl Tanzler married 31-year-old Doris Schaefer. The couple had 2 children, Aisha Tanzler, born in 1922, and then Clarissa Tanzler in 1924. On February 26, 1926, Carl sailed to Havana, Cuba, leaving behind his family in Germany. He then traveled to Zephyr Hills, Florida, where eventually his wife and 2 daughters joined him to live with his sister. Later that same year, Carl Tanzler abandoned his family and moved to Key West, Florida, changing his name to Count Carl Tanzler von Kossel, after his alleged dead ancestor. His wife Doris confirmed that Carl had no royal lineage and the title of Count was a title he had created himself. Carl was great with money. He was able to use his military pension from being involved in the war during his imprisonment in Australia. He used this wealth to purchase expensive watches, outfits, and shoes to reflect his royal aristocratic fantasies. He was often seen walking around town with a confident stride in his black tailcoat and cane. His appearance made him stand out in the crowd. He was bald with white hair around the back of his head. He had a pointed nose and little eyes that were distinctive facial features. Carl also wore thin circular rimmed glasses to accessorize his diplomatic style. Carl introduced himself to everyone he met as a doctor by the name Count Carl Tanzler von Kossel, or Dr. Carl von Kossel, with 9 degrees. He was able to find work as an x-ray technician at the U.S. Marine Hospital in Florida. It was on April 22, 1930, when Carl was 53 years old. He was striding down the hall of a hospital wing when his eyes fell upon the woman of his dreams. Maria Elena Miragro de Hoyos was more commonly known as Elena. She was born on July 31, 1909 in Key West, Florida. Her father was a cigar maker, Franco Hoyos, and Aurora Cifuentes was her mother. She was the middle child of 3 daughters, and her parents raised 3 very respectful teenage Catholic girls. At 16 years old, Elena got married to Luis Mesa on February 18, 1926. The couple were expecting their first child soon. Unfortunately, Elena experienced a miscarriage and lost the baby. Her husband Luis left soon after. Although they were still legally married, they were separated. Gradually, Elena developed a terrible illness. Her family initially blamed the constant coughing as a side symptom of sadness from losing her husband and her child. Elena was diagnosed with tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is the airborne, highly infectious disease that is caused by TB bacteria that attacks the lungs, kidneys, brain, and even the spine. If not properly treated, it can be fatal. When Elena was diagnosed, her family was very scared. Many members of her family and the community had already contracted the sickness, and some have already died. The family sought medical attention for Elena and were referred to the Marine Hospital for further testing. The lonely Dr. Carl Tanzler von Kossel was the overseer of the procedures. As he watched the family explain their daughter's condition, he was mesmerized by her exotic beauty. the way her dark brown eyes gleamed behind a set of thick lashes, the way her mahogany hair framed her heart-shaped face as she looked around the room. This was the woman of his dreams. He was shaken out of his hypnosis by the sound of her voice asking what the doctors could do to help because her family was very poor. Carl quickly regained his composure and, with a high sense of self-importance, insisted that he himself help the family, free of charge. He explained to the family that he had the proper equipment to perform house calls and to treat Elena outside the hospital if needed. With such a generous offer, the Hoyas agreed. The family did not see the desire that lurked behind the self-proclaimed, experienced doctor's eyes. Carl Tanzler envisioned the future that he and the young Elena Hoyas were about to embark upon. She was going to be his. Carl Tanzler seemed to change towards others as he offered help to Elena. He began treating the hospital staff as if they were ignorant, and Carl began illegally transporting x-ray machines, electrical equipment, and medical tools to the Hoyas' home. The family, of course, had no knowledge of the inner workings of their doctor or legitimacy of his professed knowledge. Carl began using his own money to pay for treatments that were performed at the hospital. He paid for the ingredients to concoct medicines, and while at the same time showering Elena with gifts. He wanted her to have the finest jewelry that could accentuate the royalty he felt she radiated. Carl bought her everything to proclaim his never-ending love for her, everything from clothing to perfumes. There was no evidence that shows Elena reciprocated his love in any way. She was still, in fact, in love with her husband, who abandoned her. Elena's family had grown aware of Carl's intentions with their daughter, and they did not approve. But Elena was sick, and they were doing anything to save her. He paid for the treatments at the hospital and gave her treatments at their home. This was their only hope to save her. As time went on, Elena's sickness only grew more fatal. Her coughing had damaged her esophagus, and the bacteria only spread throughout her body. Elena began losing feelings in her hands, feet, and the sight in her eyes had begun to diminish. Carl watched his love lose all the life that her body had every day. But he was not going to give up on trying to save her. He even went so far to attempt electrical shock therapy, sending bolts of electricity coursing through her body. Each session lasted up to 30 minutes. In the 1920s, there was very little information on tuberculosis and the proper treatments. X-ray machines and radiation was still a new concept used on patients. Carl Tanzler genuinely had every intention of trying to cure Elena. As the days went on, Carl had the feeling that the inevitable was upon her. Elena Hoyos would soon die if he could not find the remedy. And although she was inches from death, he did not want to lose her. Carl then began constantly asking for her hand in marriage, and each time she refused. She was not accepting his gifts and was too sick to even think of the prospect of wedlock. Elena's sister, Nana Hoyos, witnessed the entire attempted courting of the doctor. In an interview with the Miami Herald, she said, quote, "Elena never loved Tanzler von Kossel. She was only nice to him because my mother told her she should be kind to those who were kind to her. She looked upon Carl Tanzler von Kossel as a grandfather, and when he proposed marriage, she always told him, 'You're too old. Why? You were old enough to be my grandfather. What's more, I do not love you.' He became so persistent that we had to ask him to stay away from the house." Elena's family explained that they eventually demanded Carl to not come back, since his proposals never ended. The family was uncomfortable and pleaded with him to stop. The treatments he was performing had no effect on their daughter and only seemed like torture. When Carl insisted his love for Elena was never-ending and genuine, the family decided to move. They did not tell Carl of their new residence. When Carl discovered that the family had moved without telling him, it destroyed him. He spent nights searching every neighborhood, asking where to find Elena Milagro de Hoyos. Carl would approach community members and tell his distorted, romanticized tale that he needed to save her because everyone else had given up. Eventually, someone took pity on his sob story and told him the location of the family. Carl made his way to the house. When the family realized this man would go to the world's end for Elena, they decided to make their message very clear. You stop trying to court Elena. You stop buying her gifts. This is strictly for her medical health. Nothing more will ever come of this. Carl Tanzler sadly agreed. His treatments then continued on. On October 25, 1931, Elena Hoyos succumbed to her illness and died in her parents' home in Key West, Florida, at the age of 22 years old. The family was devastated, and their emotions were so mixed when it came to the help of Carl Tanzler because of their financial status. They wanted help and figured that they kind of had to deal with his creepiness to possibly save their daughter. And the parents had lost other relatives from the disease, and it was now a common demise within the community. So here's what I found. There's an article that was written in the Tennessean Sun paper years after the event in the 1940s. So a cousin of the Hoyos explained that the family, including Elena, hated Carl Tanzler. They couldn't stand him. And they said, quote, "Elena's two rescues from death via shock therapy by Tanzler von Kossel had been so painful that Elena finally died hating her rescuer and begged to be allowed to stay dead. She forbade the family to let Tanzler von Kossel know until she was too far across the border to be recalled." End quote. So the entire family thought this guy was a fruitcake. He was a stalker that commonly used the ruse of, "I want to see her. She is the love of my life, and her family is preventing us from being together forever, and I don't know why." That is the biggest common thing told by a stalker when they're trying to find someone, okay? Red flag right there. So, Carl has now breached into stalking on an obsessive level. He is seeking others to locate her when she clearly wants nothing to do with him, no communication. So when Carl shows up at their front door, the family's like, oh, fuck, really? Really? And then they start to take into consideration, maybe as creepy as this guy is, he will be able to save her, right? So they sit him down and they say, look, stop proposing to our daughter. Stop trying to marry her. It's not going to happen. You can try to graciously save our daughter, and we are grateful for that. But she doesn't want to marry you, so leave her the fuck alone. And because Carl was in love with her, he stayed. I'm sure he had a little bit of a hissy fit, but he stayed because he was obsessed with this girl. So now he's trying to really save her, and the treatments are becoming dangerous. And Elena told her family that he used shock treatment to prevent her from going into cardiac arrest and seizures. And if it was to happen again and he wasn't there, please don't tell him, because I don't want to have to go through the electrical shock therapy that he's putting me through 30-minute increments. So that's exactly what happened, and that's how she died. Carl wasn't there. So when he found out, oh, he was not happy. He was not happy. Carl said in his memoir that he was furious that he was not told sooner that she was dying. He said, quote, "If you had only come to me a half an hour earlier, perhaps it wouldn't have been too late." He lost time trying all doctors in town, but none were home. Her father had driven home at breakneck speed instead of driving to the nearby hospital where the doctors might have saved her life. Carl Tanzler signed Elena's death certificate claiming the cause of death as an expiration from a series of violent seizures clinically associated with dormant epilepsy. Carl had tried everything in his power, no matter the cost, to save the love of his life and his visions, but he failed. Carl suffered from delusions, from visions of his childhood that said a dark-haired, beautiful woman would be the love of his life. And in my opinion, that is unbelievably broad. That's 20% of the population. So looking into that specifically, Carl has a condition which health professionals would consider OLD, obsessive love disorder. Obsessive love disorder is the obsessive infatuation with one person who you may think may be in love with you back, but they're not. It also has ways of seeming like one is protective of their partner when in fact they are controlling them like a possession. It's a very abusive behavior. An individual who has obsessive love disorder will not take rejection well and then usually become more obsessive by finding more outlets to stalk their target. Just as Carl did, he knew she didn't want to talk to him, yet he persisted when he was rejected. So symptoms of OLD may include an overwhelming attraction to one person, possessive thoughts and actions, extreme jealousy, monitoring the actions of the other person, obsessive thoughts about the victim, feeling of needing to protect them, and low self-esteem of needing to regain communication. So what causes obsessive love disorder? So it's important to note that no separate medical or psychological classification exists for obsessive love disorder. It is often accompanied by other forms of mental illness. So Healthline explains that a person who suffers from attachment issues, borderline personality disorder, delusional jealousy, just to name a few, could possibly be someone who could get obsessive love disorder. The most popular form of OLD is when it intersects with delusion and a person believes someone who is famous or of a higher status is in love with them. So basically, obsessive love disorder sounds more like a romantic way to say stalker, which is not good. Stalking is not good. It's January, National Stalking Awareness Month. Hey, hey, hey. So in Carl's case, a vision came to him and he chose Elena to be the one correlated with the dream and he became obsessed with her. So there is very little detailed about his childhood psychology that could explain possibly why he is like this. But he did have childhood illusions that carried forth into adulthood and that led him to do what he is about to do. He is a visionary criminal. And as with visionary criminals, their crimes are unbelievably fucked up. So let's take a turn for the dark and twisted. After Elena's death, Carl offered to pay the funeral costs, which the family gratefully accepted. Carl's behavior towards the family had changed slightly. He was no longer openly angry about not being able to have Elena. Elena's mother felt that the least she could do for Carl, since he spent months trying to save their daughter, was to offer him a gift. A bag of Elena's hair as a keepsake. Taking the bag, he held it to his heart. He thanked the mother with pure appreciation and promised to cherish it as a memory. A source indicates that Carl Tanzler talked to the Hoyos family into allowing him to rent her bedroom for $20 a month, which is roughly $345 in today's money. Seeing as the family had forgiven Carl and they were struggling financially, the money was very much an incentive to rent the room. It seems as though that for Carl, this was more of a move for possession. To have a claim over the place Elena had slept and died, not so he could actually live there. Carl did have a residence that he was staying at, so the reasoning is questionable. Carl would visit the gravesite of Elena every day, but grew heavily concerned that her body would be destroyed if the groundwater entered the coffin. That is when Carl constructed a large white mausoleum at the local cemetery that took 3 months to build. Elena's married name of Mesa, remember she was still legally married, was not on the tomb. Instead, at the bottom corner was the name Countess Damsel Kossel, which of course is a title created by Carl. The reaction of the family is unknown. Due to Carl paying for the elaborate mausoleum, I doubt the family would bring it up. When Carl seen Elena's corpse being transferred into the new casket, he was horrified. Her body had been decomposing, which is a natural process, but Carl was upset to see her like this. He attempted to put her body into a homemade incubator tank, but failed. For 2 years, Carl Tanzler grieved. People seen his display as that of a heartbroken romantic. Every night for 2 years, he would travel to the tomb and lay fresh flowers. He would sit on a chair next to her casket and would sing Elena's favorite Spanish song. His nightly routine soon turned morbid. Only being able to sit next to her coffin inside the mausoleum was not enough. On a night in April of 1933, Carl snuck into the cemetery with a small wagon and entered the mausoleum. With great force, he managed to open the casket. The smell of putrefaction filled the concrete room. Looking in, he seen the active decay of the corpse. Carl could not handle seeing Elena's body like this. He claimed that her spirit was trapped in her body and was pleading with him to save her and to take her home. He delicately picked up the corpse. Holding it in his arms, he placed it into the wagon, covering it with sheets. He then pulled her body through town to his second private residence. He had it built near Flagler Avenue, and this is also where he kept his wingless plane that he was also building. Carl took the corpse inside and laid it on the table. A friend of Carl told the media that he had received a call from Carl Tanzler, who expressed that Elena had finally agreed to marry him. He laughed, thinking that Carl was joking, because he knew that Elena had died years earlier. Carl had plans to bring Elena back from the dead using his electrical equipment, but first he had to find a way to keep his love from running away. So, he went to work employing a number of techniques over the years to preserve her body. Using piano wire and coat hangers, Carl was able to reattach the bones together at the joints. Elena's torso was heavily deflated, so he opened up her flesh and filled what he could with rags to create the proper proportions. He created a skin-like consistency by covering silk with a wax and plaster of Paris. He also used glass eyes to insert into her skull's eye sockets. Over time, Elena's hair had detached from her head. Carl then took the bag of hair gifted to him from Elena's mother and created a wig and glued it to the top of the scalp. He dressed her in newly purchased dresses, jewelry, gloves, and stockings. In the span of 7 years, Carl Tanzler von Kossel lived his life as a loving, married man to a corpse bride. He never went into details about his love life, and every morning he would wake up with Elena's rotting corpse encased next to him. He would dress it, apply makeup, carry it around, pretend to cook and feed it, dance with it, and even have sexual intercourse with it. Okay, necrophilia, fear cult, we are going there. So, the Cambridge University defines necrophilia as the sexual attraction to dead bodies or sexual activity with dead bodies. Necrophilia is not associated with any one specific mental illness or disorder. It is known that many necrophiles have been diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, schizophrenia, and or extreme bipolar disorder. We've delved into APD, antisocial personality disorder, in many previous episodes of Lullaby. As for the need for necrophilia, researchers have concluded that the primary reasoning behind it is the need for an unresisting partner. So when a corpse is dead, there is no rejection faced on the offender's part. A dead partner is non-judgmental, and there is no need to provide reciprocal orgasm during intercourse. So there are no feelings getting hurt during sex, and there is no concern about reproducing. People who commit necrophilia more often than not have been diagnosed with antipersonality disorder or have a conduct disorder that means they lack a conscience. So not everybody with APD, schizophrenia, and or bipolar disorder is a necrophile. Okay, let's make that super clear. We are not attacking anyone here. Open discussion. Let's continue. If you're wondering how someone could physically be able to sleep with the smell of a rotting corpse, I have your answer right here. And this is fascinating. It's disgusting, but it's fascinating. So in Europe in 2010, a neurological study was conducted which separated volunteers into two groups, those with schizophrenia and or bipolar disorder, and those without mental illness. The purpose was to simply test the olfactory system, which is the sense of smell, to test it between the two groups. Those with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder rated smells more positively than those without mental conditions. What this means is those particular participants with specific mental disorders demonstrated confusion in identifying putrid smells, and therefore don't necessarily smell odors as strongly as those without. Which could be a superpower, actually. To not have to smell the intensity of a putrid smell, as most of us do. Of course, unless you're a necrophile, then absolutely fucking not. That is not a good thing. Necrophilia can coexist with an associated mental condition, such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, but necrophilia is very rare. It's a very rare condition, and the strong smell of a corpse can be perceived as a pleasant smell if it doesn't bother the necrophile, okay? So Psychology Today explains that this is more relevant with necrophiles who have multiple interactions with the same corpse as it's decaying and have a higher tolerance. So for example, Carl Tanzler. Carl did state that the smell of the corpse was terrible and he was spraying it with formaldehyde and perfumes. So his mental health though was definitely eccentric and he had visions as a child, possible psychosis, and Carl was never publicly diagnosed with any previous existing conditions such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder in his childhood. So I just thought it was an interesting study, okay? Although his initial agenda was to save her and marry her, she rejected him on multiple accounts. So this allows the theory of premeditated murder to be considered. Let's continue. It had been 9 years since Elena Hoyos had passed away. 7 of those years were spent encased inside the home of Carl Tanzler von Kossel, where he reconstructed her body. People in the community began spreading rumors around town, which turned out to be accurate. One evening, a curious young boy snuck up to Carl's house window. As he peered into the sill, his eyes opened wide. The boy was watching Carl dance with a giant doll around the room. Running back to town, the boy told everyone of the strange doctor and that he was dancing with a creepy life-size doll. The community started putting the pieces together. He was always buying women's clothing and jewelry for an alleged wife that no one had actually seen. The last woman he had known to love had been dead for almost a decade. Neighbors had also started questioning as to why he was in the process of building an airplane. He always said it was to travel at a cheaper cost eventually. Carl later explained that he planned to fly himself and Elena into the Earth's stratosphere to, quote, rejuvenate her with the radiation and bring her back to life. In October of 1940, rumors had reached Elena's sister, Florinda Medina. A 1940s newspaper article said, quote, when the dead girl's sister, Mrs. Mario Medina, grew suspicious that the remains were no longer in the mausoleum Tanzler von Kossel had built, police broke into the house and found the body in a bed swathed in gauze. Fresh flowers lay in the dead girl's hair. Tanzler von Kossel proudly displayed a closet filled with bridal attire he used to dress the girl, and calmly told how he had stirred up a vat full of chemicals to preserve her body. Many of the bones had been covered in plaster of Paris and waxed to give the girl a lifelike appearance. Carl Tanzler von Kossel insisted she often came to life and talked to him. A psychiatric evaluation of Carl Tanzler stated that he was sane, although bordering insanity. Carl Tanzler was arrested and stood a preliminary trial on October 9, 1940, for wantonly and maliciously destroying a grave and removing a body without authorization. The media went into a frenzy. This man who was a hopeless romantic, wanting to be with the love of his life forever, was standing trial, at least in the eyes of the media. Carl received many fans who supported him through the trial, and the public sympathy was endless. His attorney represented him pro bono and defended Carl as an eccentric romantic. The charges on Carl Tanzler were dropped due to the statute of limitations expiring. 2 years was the maximum sentence, and he had taken the body 6 years before, and the case was dismissed. Initially, back in the 1940s, the corpse was never autopsied. In 1972, Dr. Julio Depoe examined Elena's corpse, and the results were brought into the public. Quote, I found a tube in Elena's vagina, wide enough to permit sexual intercourse. At the bottom of the tube, there was cotton, and in the examination of the cotton, I found there was sperm, end quote. The media seen Carl and Elena as a tragic love story, and it speculated that the authorities did not want to have a public uproar to a romantic story in the 1940s. It is speculated that the medical doctors avoided the autopsy entirely, in fear of finding the truth. Also, to protect Elena's surviving family from public humiliation anymore. To this day, there are still people who question the legitimacy of the allegations due to the statement being released 30 years later. Do I believe Carl Tanzler slept with the corpse of Elena? I wouldn't be surprised. In my opinion, he most likely did. So here's my reasoning. Although there was no photographic proof, two medical examiners did examine the body in the 1970s, decades later, and they both confirmed to find, quote, tube in Elena's vagina wide enough to permit sexual intercourse. At the bottom of the tube, there was cotton, and in examination of the cotton, I found there was sperm. Carl Tanzler, this crazy man, had been searching for the one true love from an eccentric childhood vision from the age of 10. 10 years old. When he finally finds her, he pours all his money into courting this girl, or at least attempting to, okay? He gets rejected on multiple occasions and then proceeds to propose to her and then gets rejected on multiple occasions. He starts fights with the family because they're like, you need to stop. She doesn't want to marry you. She's sick. And he's like, well, she'll want to marry me when she's better. And the family's like, you need to stop. They move. He hunts her down. And then when she dies, he offers to pay for the entire funeral. He rents out her room just so he can have it. He refuses to put her legal married surname onto her tombstone. And then he puts his own at the bottom corner to claim her even in death. And then he visits every single night for 2 years, proceeds to steal the body, restructure it, claim that the corpse came alive, and then lived with it for 7 more years until it was taken away. And then he was never interested in pursuing any other forms of relationships. And then he croaked at the age of 75. While between the time of him getting the corpse taken away from him, he recreated a replica doll using Elena's death mask. So yeah, it's suspicious. He was very possessive over this one woman who did not want him, and he was unbelievably attracted to her. So personally, with that all being said, I think stuff happened, you know? However, I like seeing every possibility since he was never convicted of necrophilia. It was also never brought up. There are 2 classifications of necrophilia according to psychiatric literature. In 1989, Jonathan Rosman and Philip J. Resnick described 122 cases of individuals who had a history of either necrophiliac acts or fantasies, and they differentiated 2 types. The genuine or true necrophiliac, which is categorized by consistent sexual physical attraction to dead corpses, and the pseudo-necrophiliac, who has only a transient attraction to corpses, rather than a fixed erotic preference for them. The doctors explain that there are 3 subtypes of genuine necrophilia. There is necrophiliac homicide, which is murder to obtain a corpse. There is regular necrophilia, which uses dead bodies for sexual purposes. And then there are necrophilic fantasies, where the individual fantasizes about the necrophilic acts but does not act upon the fantasies. So there is a possibility that Carl only did dream of doing these acts, except he made the woman's corpse into a damn life-size doll, which he took care of, quote, took care of, he said took care of, for 7 years. Okay, he gave the body a structure, he made it not fragile, and he was not interested in other women. Yeah. Yeah, I'll just let my fear cult wormhole on that one. He claims that he never did anything sexual with the body, and yeah. Innocent until proven guilty, my friends. Innocent until proven guilty. But no matter what the case is, all around, it's awful. The whole situation is awful, and it is not romantic. Sorry, Tansler, it's not romantic. It's a crime. Carl was extremely possessive of Elena. And even while Elena was alive, Carl mentions in his memoir how he got into multiple arguments with her family for letting others come and even attempt to talk to her while she was dying. And after the family arguments, the family packed up and moved. They were sick of Carl. And Carl said in his memoir, referring to when he found their new location, he said, quote, "If anyone had tried to stop me from entering, I think I would have used violence." So as I continue on, we will see how sinister details prove just how twisted Carl Tansler really was. After the charges were dropped, Carl Tansler requested to get Elena's body back for him to keep. The judge denied the request. Following the trial, the local funeral parlor displayed Elena's body, where thousands of people paid $1 to see the famous encasing. She was then buried in an unmarked grave in the local cemetery to prevent vandalism. According to Chief of Police Benvenito Perez, he, the undertaker Benjamin Sawyer, and the cemetery sexton Otto Bethel are the only people to know the location of Elena's unmarked grave, promising to never tell anyone for the corpse's safety. Carl Tansler removed the Count and Von Kossel from his official name, and he moved from Key West to Pasco County to live near his sister and wife, Doris. On April 14, 1941, Carl had all his belongings, including the previous empty casket of Elena from the mausoleum, moved to his house. Once Carl had left the area, a large explosion sounded around the entire town. According to Officer Perez, Carl Tanzler used a time bomb to blow up the mausoleum he made for Alina the night he left, but there was not enough proof to convict Carl of the crime. When Carl was settled down in his new home, he wrote a memoir and books telling of his romanticized version of the events. He missed her terribly. He was able to acquire a death mask to create a full-size mannequin with Alina's face. He had it in his home until his death on July 3, 1952. His body was found behind an organ 3 days after his death by police. He was 75 years old. The new replica of Elena's body was laying on his bed. Florinda Medina, Elena's sister, made a statement in the Miami Herald explaining how Carl had threatened her father by saying, quote, "If there is not a wedding in the family soon, there will be a funeral." However, no evidence was found, at least not until 1982. An article inside the Detective Cases magazine, written by William Michael Fetter, states that a renovation crew had been tearing down the walls of Carl Tanzler's cottage in Florida, and they found a confession note saying, quote, "She died because I gave this to her mercifully. I mixed the root of wolfsbane monkshood with aconite diluted. It was palatable, and my loved one departed this miserable world on October 25th, 1931. Suffer no more, sweet Elena. I have sent you to the angels with my golden elixir." Aconite is a plant in Europe and Northern Asia, and it's one of the world's most poisonous plants. History tells that aconite is derived from a Greek word meaning dart, and shepherds and hunters used to put it on the ends of their weapons. One of the symptoms of aconite poisoning is violent seizures. And as Carl Tanzler stated in Elena's death certificate, she died of violent seizures. The article continues to detail how the workers found multiple bottles full of this golden substance inside of the walls of this home with a note. The author, William Michael Fetter, then explains that they found police logs from the time frame when Carl threatened Elena's father, just as Florinda explained, as well as other testimonies made by other people. Then, a paper was found describing how he persuaded her to consume his golden elixir in higher doses than usual. The concoction contained, quote, 70% distilled water, 20% gold shavings, fruit flavoring, and just enough deadly poison to affect the slow death. So here is a quote from Carl Tanzler that was found in the house. It says, quote, "After Elena's funeral was over, some Cuban who I had never seen before indulged in a piece of fiery ordery wherein he demanded punishment for the person responsible for her early death. Whether he meant me, I do not know, and cared less." In a previous interview with Men True Adventure magazine, Chief of Police Officer Perez said, quote, "Carl Tanzler von Kossel had told me once, 'I have spent my whole life, I have roamed the earth searching for Elena. 50 years ago, she appeared to me in a vision, and she promised to be my bride. Now I have found her, and I'll kill her if necessary to fulfill my destiny.'" Oh, it's February, so happy fucking Singles Awareness Month, you guys. That is the true story of Carl Tanzler and his corpse bride. And there is nobody in this universe who could convince me that that story was romantic in any way. Absolutely not. Now, I'm not a psychologist by any means. I just research the psychology as best as I can. Now, personally, I believe he wanted to save her initially with good intent, but when she wanted nothing to do with his advances, he premeditated the murder of Elena. He was rejected and understood if Elena was alive, romantically, it wasn't gonna happen. With visionary killers, they are absolutely on another level of terror because nothing can convince them otherwise unless it was the creator of said vision in their head to tell them to stop. Albert Fish is another visionary criminal, and I discuss him in volume 4 of Lullaby. But Carl Tanzler is on another level of creepy, obsessive stalker.
There'll be more, many more. They're coming for me now. And then they'll come for you.
Back on our never-ending quest to find a truly scary movie, I have one for you. It's not exactly Valentine's Day-esque appropriate, but it's necrophile appropriate. And it's the 2013 horror thriller Contracted. The plot is a young woman is date-raped at a house party and she contracts a deadly STI. She begins bleeding, she's shedding maggots and hallucinating. It's disgusting. And I've recommended this movie to a Fear Cult member in the past, and he enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great movie. There's even a sequel if you really want to go into that wormhole. So check out Contracted. The horror YouTube short recommendation this week is also from 2013. It's Lights Out. Yes, this is the short that inspired the 2016 horror movie of the same title. I tried to scare you, now you try to scare me. Please rate and review on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow Lullaby the Fear Podcast on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Slasher, and Instagram at Lullaby the Fear Podcast. Join the Fear Cult there. So, thank you so much for listening to this week's lullaby. Sweet dreams. Lights out.